investigation that just took place. What is she saying to me? Oh, for the executive session, another half hour. Okay? So it'd be an hour altogether. And if I have a second...
Is there a second?
Okay.
Second.
So I just, I think it's great that she's coming, and I think it's very important that we have an opportunity to discuss those things which should be discussed in open session and open session, and we need to respect her request that certain issues that we're interested in must be discussed in closed session. So that's my motion. Thank you.
Is there any discussion? I see Jory's hand.
Not on this?
I'm sorry, I'm having...
I was saying that I do have my hand up. I want to discuss the agenda further, but not this issue.
Thank you very much. If there's no discussion on this particular issue, the motion is that in the expectation of Summer Reese's being able to join us, that right after the IGM report, we add an hour, which will be divided into a public session for 30 minutes and an executive session for 30 minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Jory, you have the floor. Could you grab a mic? And Janet, you're next.
I would like to add to the agenda a report from the Pacifica National Board Development Committee.
Do you have a place on the agenda? I draw your attention to item number 12, which has a PNB report. Is it okay to link those two?
Sure. Okay, if I'm still here, I have to leave early, so.
Well, you make the choice. Tell me what you prefer in your motion.
I would like it to be before old business.
And I guess about, give me a piece of time that you think Joya would need.
2 minutes.
Okay, a motion has been made that there'll be a 5-minute interval for a report on, from Joy related to the PNB, and it come right before. Pardon? The Development Committee. I'm sorry, my mind. Thank you. And that it come right before old business. If any objections?
Yes.
Hearing none. Oh. Jenna?
Well, I have a substitute motion to move the entire item 12 up further, earlier on the agenda, including this Development Committee report, because those items, the PNB report and the GM hire, might be pertinent, probably would be pertinent to the IGM report and summer and all that. So I move that we move that whole item. Like,
where?
I don't know. After 7? Or between the IGM report and summer's? Or...
May I recommend that we put it in after 8, after the Treasurer's report? Is that okay with you?
Okay, yeah.
The motion has been, if I understand it correctly, and please jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, take item number 12, add to it Jory's request for a report on the Development Committee for 5 minutes, and put the whole segment up right after currently numbered 8. And I see nods. Any objection to that coalition motion by Joy and Janet? Hearing none, so ordered it. Anything else on the agenda before Andrea? A mic to Andrea, please.
I got it right here. We'll do.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I was curious. I asked for a report back from the Samsara and Dan were given Samsara and Dan. I don't know what to name it because I just don't know what to name it. But my hope had been that we would have a conversation about institutionalized racism within KPFA.
Isn't that 10?
Yeah. That's what I'm asking. Which item are you guys reckoning?
10F.
Okay, so that includes that if there, is it possible, Dan, is that when you were expecting to report back on, the whole issue to me isn't related to the workplace investigation. I feel like there's a public thing and there's an inclusive thing and there's a whole public discussion of how racism is carried within KPFA. So to me, those things are different issues. And so I'm just curious to hear back from Dan and Samsara. If they haven't been able to get together, that's totally fine, but I'm wondering how to carry the ball, how we promote this discussion. There's a beautiful discussion happening within Berkeley Unified School District. There's cultural competency stuff. I mean, God, there's just wonderful stuff happening, so I'm wondering, when are we going to get to that conversation?
The question is to Dan. Could you pass the mic to him, please?
You know, I've got a 90-second or 2-minute report that I thought would be part of item F. Seems good place for it, but I can make it whenever people want to hear it.
Please use a mic.
That's totally fine with me. I just want to be clear so that when I'm trying to have that conversation, I'm not ruled out of order. That's what I'm seeking.
Well, that would be an appropriate place to raise it. I can't.
Well, that's awesome to hear. That's all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Remember that we hope to hear some further information from Summer Rees in executive session that might be relevant to this whole issue. But I can't promise in advance.
Please, Mr. Chairman, I just want to be clear that what I want, the conversation I want to have is not an executive session conversation.
I understand
it's,
that.
Just to be clear. Thank you.
What I had hoped to communicate was that we will have received pertinent information for that discussion. All right. Anything, Tracy?
I have a problem-solving suggestion here. I wasn't going to jump in, but having heard this information, Dan says that he has a 2-minute informational report of some kind. 2 minutes isn't very long, and in a sense, this is sort of a subcommittee of the LSB that we...
I'm having trouble understanding you. Please speak more slowly. It's echoey here.
Okay. I have a problem-solving suggestion. Since informational report from the LSB subcommittee of him and Samsara in informational reports, I think that would provide a place for it that we'd be more likely to get to than item F under old business, and it would be appropriate because essentially it's an informational report. So I'm going to make that as a motion that we...
A question from the chair. If it's a... What I heard from Andrea was a request for an opportunity to have a discussion, which in my mind is different from an informational report.
I can't hear
you without the mic, and it's right near you.
Well, I mean, normally when we have a report, sometimes discussion ensues as a result of the report.
Is there a second?
Then I think you need to put somebody needs to put some time on it. And ladies and gentlemen, we can use our whole day on such a discussion and never get down to business. I see Janet's hand. I see Dan's hand.
Do you want me to put a time on the motion? Was that a request?
I beg your pardon?
Did you want me to put a time in the motion that I'm making? Was that a request?
Yes, please.
Okay. Okay, so the reports are 3:30 and 3:40. So the reports are suggested for 20 minutes. Okay, so the motion is to add an item C for the Dan Samsara Committee report back, and to change the amount of time on informational reports from the 20 minutes on the agenda to 30 minutes.
Okay. It would be a D because we have Joy in there as a C, but I understand it. The motion is that item 12 be moved up to where it is on your printed agenda right after A8, and it have four parts. The two listed, the item that Joy raised, and the report with regard to the Committee on Workplace Discrimination, and that, I'm sorry, I missed it, that we make the whole segment 30 minutes. Is that a correct paraphrase, Tracy?
Yes.
Okay.
Second.
Pardon me?
Is there a second to the motion?
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Now, discussion. I see Janet's hand.
I have
my hand up. And I see Dan's hand. Janet, and I see Craig's hand.
Okay, so to me, this is kind of the similar or the same thing as item F under old business. And I'm assuming that when summer comes, this item F will be discussed. So there's 20 minutes, and I don't know whoever had in mind to put this on, what was going to happen during this 20 minutes. So either that 20 minutes can be move to item D in under 12 that's being moved after 8. So I'm saying item F will basically include, the Dan and Samsara's subcommittee report and discussion would include that the status update on workplace discrimination inquiry, a discussion on that? Just trying to come up with some more time.
Dan and then Craig. Would somebody get a mic in? Dan, there's one's over here.
So I would suggest that the chair simply resolve these issues and not spend time discussing
where
5 minutes for this and 5 minutes for that. Why don't you just rule? If someone doesn't like it, they can move to overrule you.
Amen.
Craig, you asked for the floor.
Don't have the floor.
So I just had a question about, with Tracy's suggestion, what happens to F? Does that stay, or is that replaced by D? So it's replaced. So we would have it basically 5 minutes on Dan's report, and then 10F would be deleted. Is that correct?
That is the chair's understanding of the of an aspect of Tracy's motion. All right, folks, get ready to get annoyed at my ruling. Item 12 is moved up to follow what is printed as item 8. It includes four parts, the A and B that is as printed, the former request from Jory, which we have agreed to, and the motion made by Tracy, which was to incorporate F into a segment and add time so that that whole segment is available for 30 minutes. That is my understanding, and it is my ruling, and I'm ready to... I don't see anyone objecting to that. So we're now... the agenda has been so modified by the, my understanding, and I will turn it back to the secretary to deal with the minutes.
Okay, so does everybody have a copy of the minutes?
Oh.
You keep it, you need it. Is there another copy over there? Great, thanks. Okay, so are there any changes, corrections to the minutes?
Margaret?
People are still reading.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
A moment or two more. When you finish reading, please look up. See a couple of board members still reading.
Okay, so... We all set? So, Margie?
I move we approve the minutes.
So, the motion to approve, is there a second?
Second.
No, not Janet, but other people second. Okay. Any discussion? Janet?
Okay. I just scanned, and I'm not sure whether I have the meetings mixed up, but... at one point, Richard talked about the process within the station of if a programmer put something on the air that wasn't supposed to be or something like that, and the process. And that was discussed more in detail in closed session, but then we agreed to report it out. Was that last month or the month before? I can't remember, and I don't know if that's here.
Was that FCC violations you're referring to?
Yeah.
I believe that was a previous meeting.
Okay, sorry.
It may have been July, I believe. So, okay, so we have a motion to approve the minutes and seconded. Any objections? Okay, so they're approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Could somebody bring... Andrew, is there a... could you get me the public sign-up sheet at the back table, please?
Could I just ask a quick question? A point of information, maybe, or something? Does Summer know where the LSB meeting is? Okay.
Frank.
I was wondering if anybody got the password for the web access for this wireless network. The wireless password for the internet. Anybody ever get that? I'm just curious. If it's too much, just let me know.
I couldn't hear what you said. Aye. Mr. Tan Nichols, is joining us. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mel Sanders. My apology. Maybe I'll, by the time that year is up, I'll recognize everybody. All right. Brian, I hadn't asked this before, but may I have you throughout the meeting serve also as timekeeper, or can you do that as well as board operator?
It'll interfere with my ability to play video games.
Okay, good. All right, the following list of, we have three of our members, Virginia Browning, Daniel Borgstrom, and Brian Geiser, have asked to speak. Virginia Browning, please give her the mic, and we are, just to remind everybody, the board and public speakers are limited to 3 minutes. Please go ahead. Do you have the mic? You have the floor.
I do. Yes. Okay, so I just want to say something I've said before, which is sort of in a new way, though. I really encourage people on this board or anybody that has any power that can hear this to try and get discussions going about the issue that is really the big issue at KPFA, I think, which is there are choices that are being made. I ran into two KPFA staff members in the past month. One of them is on the Save KPFA so-called side, and one of them is an unpaid staff member who probably isn't on any side. But what the unpaid staff member told me is even more of something that I've had reported before, that equipment is so bad at the station, they feel like they can't even use the computers at the station to do programs. It's not only that, but they're not encouraged to find help from paid staff members at the station. And then we have paid, and the Save KPFA person that I ran into is a very nice person, you know. But what I could say is that it seems to me there's this huge issue where some paid staff members will do absolutely anything to keep their jobs. And it's at the cost sometimes of some of the other wellness at the station. And I am concerned, and always have been concerned, not only with the current situation, but the future too, because what can happen, and it's been brought up by some of these board members, they've said, well, you know, we'll get more money if we don't be so radical. Well, I mean, that could happen more and more. You know, this whole idea of an elected board, maybe it's a nutty thing the way it's set up, but without some kind of countervailing force against self-interested paid staff members, they're deciding everything. And a few there do really decide pretty much everything, actually. There's always going to be pressure to get a radical edge off of things. I mean, some of you may think you're very radical now, but when it comes down to push and shove, without some kind of community input from people that are not interested in only keeping jobs there, and that means some kind of elected board with non-staff people, then there's always going to be a push to have it be more conservative. Let's see, there's one other thing about that, and my brain didn't click in, but let's see if I can remember it. So, let's see, I have none.
Thank you very much. Could you tilt that a little bit so I can get a view of it as well?
And it,
I can, but I can see what's coming and give a warning. Okay, Mr. Bergstrom, you have the floor and you have the mic.
Well, can you hear me? I guess you can. I'm Daniel Borgstrom, and I've been out of the area for recently, and I just got back. I was literally out in the woods, out of the loop, not in contact with anything that was happening. And I just got back this last week, and the next morning I listened to KPFA News in the morning. And BART is on strike, I learned. And what do I hear? I hear an announcement from the management, that the BART management side is presented. In detail, it's all their complaints against the union. And then at the end of this, a few moments was given to the union side to maybe make a brief comment. This is typical of what I would hear on the corporate news. And brings up the question, what do we even have KPFA for if we're going to do it like that? The person who was making that, giving the news, she's not some amateur. She's been here for 30 years giving the news. She runs the newsroom. And this, what KPFA needs to do is, there's the corporate media gives plenty of time to management. KPFA is here to give an alternative. Give that to the workers, the BART workers who are on strike for a legitimate reason. In regards to BART workers, I do find it an inconvenience. I depend on BART, but I certainly do support their strike. I'm willing to put up with the inconvenience so that they can win their strike. We need to support the BART workers. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Geiser.
Hello. Daniel, I heard that as well, and I also heard some on some of the other news broadcasts of them having the union members on, and I appreciated that. I want to thank everybody for coming here to Oakland. I often don't make it over to Berkeley, and so I appreciate you visiting here. I live on the other side of over near the lake. Like Daniel, I happened to be gone for a couple of weeks as well. I was traveling throughout the Northwest of our country, and I'll tell you, it's a real news desert out there. I'd have to turn the television on. I don't have a television, and just to try and find the weather, and then you would find yourself sucked into like local news broadcasts on the television, and it was. That's okay. And it was absolutely bizarre. But anyway, it was nice to come back to the Bay to at least hear some alternative voices. Regarding the fund drive recently here, I'll have to admit I've been a longtime supporter of KPFA, and I've stopped listening during the fund drives, except for the evening news. And I know we all try to brainstorm and come up amongst ourselves as what we can do to get more news out there about KPFA, but I've given up listening during them. I did deliver an annual donation a couple of weeks ago, and that brings me to a point I want to bring up, and that is, how does one get into the station? A couple of years ago, the first time I volunteered for the phone staff, it was a Saturday afternoon, and I was fortunate enough that two other volunteers were going in at that time, and they knew how to get in. And so I was able to get in. Just around the change of the year here, I wanted to go on a Saturday morning to, there was going to be a local community board or something that they were trying to start up. And it wasn't really intended for old white males like myself, but I thought I would show up just to see like who was showing up. And no one was there. There was no announcement that it was canceled. And I couldn't even get in. And I stood outside hoping to find somebody else going in so I could get in. But then the third issue was when I dropped off my donation a couple of weeks ago, thankfully, I knew of where the phone room was, and so I was able to, and one of the windows was open, and I was able to crawl through the bushes and yell in there, and someone, I was able to hand my check to someone. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. And then finally, I'm just curious what's up with FSRN. I don't expect an answer, but I know there was some issues lately, and since I've been gone, I'm curious what's up with that. But thank you.
Thank you very much.
Could you give us your name?
My name's Brian Geiser.
We thank you all for the public comments. We are now at the agenda item number 6, which is announcements, and we've set aside 5 minutes approximately for that. Any announcements? I see Janet's hand. I see Andrea's hand. Janet, you have the floor.
Okay, 2 announcements. One, there is an action happening right now at Ocean Beach, and it's a human mural, people laying out on the sand in the filling in an outline of Fukushima is here. And this is organized by Brad Newsham, who did the Beach Impeach many years ago and several other things like that. I would have wanted to participate, but this is more of a responsibility. And the second announcement is on October 25th, I passed out these postcards or these flyers. There's an action facing Urban Shield, Say No to Urban Shield, War Games, War Profiteers, and Militarization of Police in Oakland. And this is taking place at from 5 to 6. It's a rally at 11th Street and Broadway in Oakland. Again, Urban Shield. And for more information, there's a website, facingteargas.org. This is October 25th, and oh, I understand it's all day long, but there's a rally from 5 to 6.
And Andrea, could somebody get a mic over to Andrea? Thank you very much, Frank. Joy, you're on the list.
Yeah, I think most
Dan, you're on the list.
Do you want me to see the phone number? I don't see the phone number. The announcement I wanted to make has to do with the Berkeley Police Review Commission. This coming Wednesday, Berkeley Cop Watch is going to present their people's investigation of the death of Kayla Moore. Kayla Moore, African-American transgendered woman who died in police custody in her own apartment. So this Wednesday, October 23rd, at 7 o'clock at the South Berkeley Senior Center on Ashby and Ellis, we're asking especially Berkeley residents, but everybody to come and join in a really informative conversation about what's up with mental health policies and the interaction between police and people with mental illness. So I hope you can come. I have flyers if you like. Also today, this afternoon, at the new Parkway Theater, there's another event, police accountability event. They're showing a new Mumia Abu-Jamal movie, and the National Lawyers Guild has a little movie about the case that was won relative to the Oscar Grant protesters. So maybe folks will show up to that as well. Thanks.
Could you get the microphone over to Joy, please? Thank you, Frank.
So I'll pass these around. I don't know if I think I've announced it before, but the garden and cooking program in Berkeley Unified School District was cut, and they're having a fundraiser on November 12th. It's a Taste of North Berkeley. If you get a $30 ticket, you can eat in over 20 fine dining spots to support the cooking and garden program. So I'll pass these around. Come out if you can, and if you're on the radio, I'd like some promotion put towards it too, Brian.
And Dan, Margie, could you share your mic, please? Bring it down your end.
Bring it down.
So anyway, everyone knows that the bar strike is going
Dan,
forward.
Move the mic up.
The port truck drivers, these are non-employee, so-called independent contractors, badly paid owners of trucks, in other words, who work at the port, who support the BART strike, are going to have a one-day strike of their own Monday morning beginning at 5 a.m. with the goal of closing the port on Monday. So they're asking people to come on down. I'm not exactly sure
where they will be setting up their blockade or lines, but it should be obvious if you head down towards the port.
Thank you. That ends the people who I know had announcements. Before I move on to the next agenda item, last call. Any further announcements? Seeing none, I'm going to pass the mic over to the interim general manager for his report.
I'll grab this. Let's do that. Sorry. I just wanted to touch on a few items. Recently, we began the process of shutting down a Facebook group. The Facebook group was established by a previous IT director some years ago. It was administered by a paid staffer at the station. The reason why it was shut down had nothing to do with free speech or anything else. Anybody is free to post whatever they want, wherever they want to. The concern here was liability. This station was warned some time ago with regard to online liability, and they paid the price for it then in terms of a part of the payment of a lawsuit. The fact that it was established by the station, the fact that it was administered by the station, meant, according to the people we spoke with, that the station was indeed somewhat responsible for the content there. There were any number of people who were concerned about the content. As a manager, I was more concerned about the liability, especially with the station's history. As I say, it doesn't stop anyone from going to other sites, other places, posting whatever comments they want to. But whatever they post is not going to be the responsibility of the station. Part of the reason for the workplace investigation was to address liability concerns. One of the reasons why the workplace investigation had to happen was because those liability concerns were of great concern to insurers. Essentially, they were saying we had to do things to reduce liability or we wouldn't have insurance. Insurance is a good thing to have. We had an investigation. We are in the process of addressing those liability concerns. This is one of them. I do hope that whatever any member of the station or this board wishes to accomplish, that at some point the discussion of is the station liable? Is there risk to it? It should be discussed. The risk should be weighed. Moving on to the fall fund drive, it was a valiant effort. We did, I think, reasonably well. We did not meet the goal that we had established. It is not an insurmountable amount of money, and so that goal will simply be added to the December drive. That December drive is going to be something a bit different. During the time that I've been here, I've tried to follow the standard procedure that KPFA does for fund drives. And there are any number of aspects of that procedure which don't necessarily relate to making the most amount of money in the quickest amount of time. That's what fund drives are about. The longer we stay in fund drive, the less we can do what we're supposed to do. The less programming we have, fewer programs we have, addressing the various needs. We essentially have to follow up a process of trying to raise money through premiums, and that necessitates the cutting of other kinds of important content. Goalbusters is going to be with us for the December fund drive. They will be here a total of 5 days. They, beginning this Tuesday in a conference call, will be setting the new procedures. They will be setting best practices. They will be working with us for the pre-promotion of the drive. They will also be on the air with us sometimes. They will be setting the clocks. In other words, programmers who feel as though they can play the premium and then come on at the end and do an extensive pitch, they're going to find that there are better ways of doing it. I guess there would be some concern about turning the fund drive over in such a substantial way to Goldbusters. However, since we don't have a director of marketing and development, they are serving as such. They are working toward making this station able to afford an effective director of marketing and development. I have to tell you, they've had success everywhere they've been. And I'll just give you one comparison. In the morning, at the exact same time that we air the same program, they air the same program. When we were listening to it together, we got the final total, and it was about $1,800. They told me that they routinely raise, during that same period, with that same program, $2,500 to $3,000. Now, that doesn't seem like much, but you have to consider there's a big difference between the media market in Yuma, Arizona, and Berkeley, California. Oh, I'm sorry. So we do need to try something different. We need to see if there's a better way to raise money, if there's a quicker way to raise money, so we don't have to spend so much time raising money. I have to tell you, I get emails, letters, postcards, phone calls, all complaining about the amount of time we spend raising money. We're hurting ourselves. We're ticking off a whole lot of people who would like to support us, but would like us to get on with the business we're supposed to do. So I understand that there are going to be any number of folks who are upset. I realize that there are especially programmers at the station who feel as though they're sometimes disrespected simply because we're asking them to do something that they don't wish to do on the air to raise money. I do not mean to slap anyone in the face. What I mean to do is to try and set things up so we can be effective in our fund drive, get it over with, and get back to doing what we're supposed to do. Lastly, I would like to mention about the position that was in the budget that is new to KPFA, and that is the combination fund drive volunteer coordinator. We have made an interim hire, and we are establishing a committee to eventually do a permanent hire. I would like to point out that volunteers are a major resource of any community station. And judging from KPFA, to date, we've kind of undervalued our volunteers and what they can offer. We've somewhat undervalued the skills they have, the time they have to help us, and most importantly, since we are concerned about money, there are any number of things that volunteers can do that they will do for free and that we don't have to pay for. With just a little bit of coordination, we could have the reception desk covered, and there wouldn't be any problems about anybody getting into the building during business hours. So it would be a matter of again, doing a coordinated approach so there is no burden, no excessive burden on any volunteer. A number of them could be put into a pool where they could regularly be scheduled to handle the reception desk. I would ask that the board consider, though, what other stations do. And that is, they, for volunteers, and please let me make this point in the, what I hope isn't terribly objectionable. KPFA makes what our investigator said, a distinction without a difference. We have unpaid staffers and we have volunteers. And he said that as far as California State is concerned, there's no difference. Unpaid staffers are volunteers. Most stations require a specific number of volunteer hours for those unpaid staffers or volunteers who have programs. Those hours are apart from the hours they spend on the air, and they are apart from the hours they use to prep for when they're on the air. Those hours have to do with giving back to the station. It might be serving on a board or a committee. It might be at the reception desk. It might be donating production skills to generating premiums or for some other show. The fact of the matter is we don't do any of this now. In fact, we don't even tabulate the number of hours our volunteers and our unpaid staffers contribute. And by the way, that's important for this body because that allows them to be able to vote. What if they're not putting in the required hours? What if there are people who are simply padding the roles? This is a very important position, and I do hope the board understands that we can do a lot better in terms of getting value that our volunteers want to contribute. It is simply a matter of establishing some kind of standards in terms of the number of hours required and then making sure that we have someone in place, like the volunteer coordinator, to make sure that everything is scheduled properly for the convenience of the volunteers. So I do ask that at some point the board, because there are any number of documents that talk about required hours, the last one I saw required 3 hours a year to be able to vote. That doesn't sound like much to me, certainly when compared to other stations. Excuse me?
It's 30.
Thank you. Even so, that still is kind of light. I can give you a number of standards that other stations have used. Some will do 10 hours a month. Some will even do more.
Come on, folks.
But I would ask you to start the dialogue because I think in terms of the value to the station, in terms of getting better quality, in terms of simply being fair to everyone, it would be good to establish standards. Thank you.
Okay, we have time for input from the board. Just a reminder, I see hands already. I'll ask for hands in a moment. Please try to focus on questions to the IGM, and the pattern is that we will hear the questions and then I'll turn the floor back to the IGM to answer them all at once. I saw Donald's hand, I saw Joy's hand, I see Frank's hand.
Mr. Chair, do you want me timing questions or responses?
I beg your pardon? I would like you to, I hope the questions will be less than 3 minutes, if they're questions. And I would like the IGM to have sufficient time to respond. We're a little bit ahead of schedule. The suggested ending time is 12:20. So let's target for that. All right. Donald, Joy, Frank, those are the members of the board who have asked for time. Donald, you have the floor.
Thank you, Richard, for bringing us as up to date as you can. I think whenever I hear you report, I have a confusion in my head. And so I want to put it forward to you to ask you what your understanding of what the powers of this board actually are. Because for all the time that I've been on it, this is an advisory board. This board has no real power to do anything, quite frankly, except make motions and pass them. With regard to the fundraising, the fund drives, if you could go into a little more detail of how you see this station lagging behind in its 21st century approach, or 20th century approach, more accurately, to fundraising on the air versus what you have seen at other stations, and why you are asking us to push that rather than you're going ahead and implementing the changes that you see that are really necessary.
Jory, do you have a mic? You're on.
I too thank you, Richard, for coming and sharing with us and letting us know what's going on. First of all, I'd like to know specifically how much short were we in the fundraiser to our goal. And you mentioned that people send you complaints about how much time we use on the air. I was wondering if in any of your discussions with anyone in KPFA, the idea of having 24/7 fundraising, in other words, instead of having fund drives 3 weeks, 4 weeks, we use our air every single day to ask for money sometime during the day, a cart that runs 3 or 4 times a day, every single day. And that might take a little bit of pressure off, and the hopefully, this is an idea that I have suggested to every interim general manager we've ever had. And we don't have to go through a policy or anything. You can just direct Dev and them to produce a cart, a fundraising cart that plays every single day. And I would ask that you did that.
Do Frank, that. You're next, and Andrea, you've been added to the list. Frank.
Hello. I'm curious about the on-air promotion, the online and on-air promotion of our video channel. I know that I mentioned to you briefly the other day that our last video stream had failed after, I wouldn't say substantial promotion, but after some promotion. And I was curious, too, if we're taking any steps that I've mentioned in the past, concerning my emails about finding a place on the front page of the web to list our video streams, maybe to have a better way to share the information that goes out about our streams, and maybe a look at our web position and how it operates and what actually that position should involve, you know, because at my event, at my last event, the web guy is always present at the event, updating, making sure things are running smoothly. But as I'm finding with these more video streams that I'm producing, there's no support. I mean, I could promote it all I want and get it, try to promote it, and then when it happens, there's nothing on our channel the night it's supposed to happen. So, and I'm looking for more support. I think the video broadcasting area on KPFA could be an alternative fundraiser, and you know, there's a lot of projects happening. You know, Steve Zelser did so many labor ones. I've done an Iraq Veterans Against the War one, so... Basically, that's it. Online promotion of our video streams, what's happening there, and some advancement in our web technology and production.
Okay, Andrea gets a mic, and Tracy is next on the list.
Richard, thanks so much for being here. And I think I love hearing you talk about that aspect of volunteer accountability, and because I think the other side of that is that to have a more kind of formalized and articulated relationship means that we can also do like best practices and professional development for volunteers. And I'm interested to hear if you have any thoughts about how the volunteer coordinator might implement or work with the apprenticeship program to sort of cultivate KPFA as a learning center for broadcast journalism and just broadcasting in general, radio broadcasting. And I'm also interested to hear you describe what you think the changes are. What will be different between the last fund drive and the next? Maybe particularly. Because, you know, this, and I'm glad Summer Reese was here. Because I've been interested in this notion of having an online membership that has unique programming and unique access. And I think that interfaces with what Frank's talking about with the streaming and what is available to somebody who becomes a member might begin to look different than just receiving a premium in the mail. But membership might look like access to a whole DVD and audio archives of recent premiums and that kind of thing. We've been talking about it. We talked about it to Summer and so forth. So I'm just curious if you've heard anything about it. Thanks.
Thank you. Tracy, you're next. And Janet has asked for recognition, so she's on the list.
Well, since this seems like kind of the theme of the day, so this question has a short story run-up because I've been wanting to actually tell this story, so I will. About 6 months ago, my friend Craig Aaron, who runs Free Press, was in town and did an appearance on Letters and Politics, did an interview, and I ran into him at a party that evening. So I asked him, you know, how his interview went that morning. And, you know, he knows I'm on the KPFA Pacifica board, and what he said to me is, well, you know, the interview was fine, blah, 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 you know, nice discussion, he said, but, I mean, the equipment at that place, he said, I'd never been to KPFA before. It's like a bunch of dinosaurs. I mean, for God's sakes, why don't these people buy some up-to-date computers? He said it was like, he said, I was really shocked. It's like working with your hands tied behind your back. And, you know, I mean, Free Press is not an enormous organization. Their annual budget is about $4 million. They have about the same number of employees that we do, and they pay them about the same. Maybe a little more. Not much more. So I wanted to kind of put that out to say that, you know, we've got some problems. If we were raising $100,000 more in the last fund drive than our goal, we could say, whoopee, we have some resources to put into play to start to solve these problems. That's not what happened. So I think we really have to kind of do some creative thinking about how we're going to get our technological level up to something that really isn't, you know, shocking and embarrassing to people when they walk in, because the individual who said something about, you know, the unpaid staff who says, you know, the equipment doesn't work, I can't, you know, it's, I can't produce. I mean, this is true, and this is seen by insiders and outsiders and people all over the place. And once you start falling behind, and we have started falling behind, you tend to fall further and further behind. So I'm really, you know, I'm worried about it. I feel like I have to say something about it, and I really want to start hearing some ideas about what we're going to do about it. I think it's one of the most central issues that we've really got to put some serious thought into. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say.
The mic goes to Janet, and Dan is on the list. I don't want to discourage anybody else from asking for the floor, but we must leave time for the responses.
Mine is real quick. Richard, would you give a little report on the programming, your programming task force?
Thanks.
Thank you, Dan.
So, Richard, I'm glad you're taking on the issue of trying to regularize documentation of the time of unpaid staff / volunteers. Just, you know, when you think about the standard in terms of how many hours should be required, think that, you know, for listener members, the financial contribution that's required is minuscule, right? So I think that there should be some proportionality when thinking about the time issue versus the money issue.
Okay. Richard, grab a mic.
Oh, here you go.
The first question was what I think the power of the board is. Well, it's kind of what I've been told, actually. It would seem as though that management can do all of its prerogatives, and then if the board doesn't like it, the board will find a way of making that change happen. This is not limited to KPFA or Pacifica. There are any number of boards for community radio stations who feel as though governance is all-encompassing. And quite frankly, one of the first things that I was told when I got here was that, yes, programming is in the purview of management. It is not a governance issue. And then they would go on to say how certain board members got upset about some of the programming, and so they they did whatever they could as a group, as a board, and even to the point of using the executive director to force changes in programming. As I say, I don't think this is in any way unusual. I can't say I agree with it, but I don't think it's unusual for boards to try to see governance as all-encompassing. So, as I say, as an IGM, you know, holding a place until the permanent GM comes in, my feeling is I need to work with the board in terms of moving anything forward in any aspect, even just in terms of keeping the board aware of what it is I'm doing. Because, you know, as I move it along, the board might say, could you do that a little bit differently? And I can. But in terms of the power of the board, when I'm talking about volunteer hours, I don't really think you want management setting that. I really don't. I'd be happy to. I would be very happy to. But in general, I think in terms of gaining a consensus, in terms of the volunteers themselves feeling as though their interests are being looked out for and that they're not at the whim of management, I think it would be a good thing for the board to weigh in on. Now, I'm not saying you have to make the decision all alone. If you want to work with me, I can put forth some of the reasons why I would expect a certain number of hours, and we can come to a joint conclusion. That's not such a bad thing. With regard to the fund drive and making updates, I'm not going to wait for the board on that, no. We went through a laundry list of things when Goalbusters was here. We've done it by email. We've done it on conference calls. There are any number of best practices that we can put in that are not happening now. It will mean that we will have to tell folks that they cannot do the fund drive as they've done it in the past or as they may choose to, the way they feel comfortable with it even. There are changes they have to make because we're not making enough money. And I don't want to jump, but in terms of equipment, yeah, it's important to make money because equipment is very expensive. And the farther behind we are, the more expensive it is to catch up. So, yeah, I, no matter what our goal is, we still need to make more. We need to have more of an equipment budget. I was told by someone in engineering that at one time, not too long ago, during the Gulf War, KPFA was bringing in a fair amount of money on every single fund drive. But the priority was not on equipment. It was not on things like station automation, which would save money in the long run and improve efficiency. The focus was on hiring people, and you did. And then when funds started to drop, then those folks had to be laid off. We have to make choices. I'm not saying that these things are easy, but right now, if I did have a nice little pot of money to spend, I'm not going to hire more people. I would use it to invest in technology. And again, I don't mean to jump, but with regard to equipment, we've just put in a Grammy grant with Goalbusters to try and get some automation for our music library. It's a rather odd situation where we have any number of music programmers who don't have direct access to the music library, which really inhibits them in terms of what they can play. Obviously, if we had station automation, if everything were digitized, that would not be a problem. So that's something we're pursuing. Also, with regard to the comprehensive grant, there are any number of aspects that deal directly with improving equipment and getting new equipment. But again, we need the money. We need to move forward on that grant. And again, that's something we're starting now that the fund drive is over. Goalbusters is working on us to start implementing the comprehensive campaign that you all got a handout on.
Part of the question was, how much were we short?
Oh, okay. I'm getting, yes.
Oh, sorry.
There was an initial figure which was drafted. Actually, I would prefer to let Barbara handle this because she's...
Oh, okay.
We went over this before, and it's in Barbara's report. But, again, the shortage is not so great that tacking it on to the December drive, especially with Goalbusters doing the drive, I don't think that's going to be a problem whatsoever. In fact, Goalbusters, their main input will be in the first 3 days. They're going to be on the air. They're going to be working with everybody on the air. They're going to be making certain that we have a clock in place that makes sense, both in terms of the number of pitches, the limit in terms of the time of the pitches, and even the programming that we're using. In other words, if we have programs that have shown that they can generate revenue, those programs will be used. Those that can't will have to be preempted, and we will find something that we feel can generate revenue. We have a shortened drive in December. We can't go very long there without running into the holidays, and that's something that we want to avoid. The best thing about the Goalbusters challenge here is that they were willing to take on the first 3 days of the drive, which usually are the lowest delivering days. So no one can accuse them of cherry picking. They're going to take the hardest part of the drive. They're going to generate revenue. And Alice and Jim are saying now they think they can well exceed the goal and not go the full length of the drive. With regard to online promotion, I've been talking with engineering, and I've been talking with Miguel. Promotion is not so hard. Content is. I do think, Frank, that at some point you and Steve Zeltzer and John Perulis and engineering all have to get together, because Yoshida is saying in terms of the delivery and in terms of the problems that you are having with Drupal, which engineering likes but is... Oh. It's essentially the system that we use to establish and support the website. With Drupal, we're limited because every time we do video, it has to reestablish itself. So it's almost as if it shuts down and then comes back up. And the problem is that with the video hole we have, it is essentially a hole because we don't have constant video content there. We have to generate more of it. So I would like to, Frank, as I say, you and Steve, John, Dev, Michael, we all need to get together and see if we can, one, establish more content, and two, working with Miguel, see if we can do a better job of online promotion. With regard to bringing in more volunteers, I specifically spoke with Tina, who is our interim volunteer and fund drive coordinator. And she is doing what she's requesting to do, what most other stations do. And that is, one, contact like-minded institutions that would like to share some of the responsibilities. They would like to be a part of the station. And in return, we would be of some service to them as well. It might be announcements that we would be obliged to make anyway. It might even be letting volunteers at the station know of other opportunities and other organizations. There are any number of ways that like-minded groups can coordinate, even in terms of programming. I know in Iowa we had the Peace and Justice Center that had a large number, very large staff, and using a program that has that many people, even though it was, again, totally volunteer, they never missed a show. They always had plenty of staff to handle everything. They were always on time, and they always generated a good show. They had resources of the organization that they were willing to use to help the station. So that's one part of it. Another is something that we've been kind of avoiding, and I'm not quite sure why, but any number of educational institutions have a public service component. And it would be nice, and Tina has agreed that she'd be more than happy to do this. We do need to do outreach to educational institutions and see if any of the students would like to be a part of the station to do volunteer work as part of that commitment. I think I spoke already about the...
The cart promotion every day.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Hang on. Yes. Those carts do exist. Deb made them the last time you and I talked about this, Joy, and he did make them, and when the fund drive is not on, they run. They run, I believe, 3 or 4 times every day.
Okay.
And at different times during the day each day.
All right, thank you.
Before you move on, I think, Andrew, did you have a...
I just want one more question.
Well, wait a minute. Wait
a minute. Wait to... If it's an additional question, wait a bit. Go ahead.
Go ahead. With regard to the programming task force, as you know, we've set up a task force to try and deal with several aspects. One was the schedule, one was KPFB, one was media supporters. Oh, my goodness, I feel like a presidential candidate from Texas. What was the fourth one, Janet? KPFB, the schedule, the media supporters, There's a fourth one, folks. I'm terribly sorry, but
Program Council.
Oh, thank you. The Programming Council is as specified by the PNB. It's a fairly slow process, folks, because I would like to achieve some consensus, and in certain areas it's difficult. In addition, there's also the matter of language, because developing media sponsors, media supporters, with whom we could do exchanges to promote programming and promote the station, there could be some concern from some quarters about viewing this as something that might go against the bylaws of Pacifica. So we are trying to be as careful as we can. In terms of the Programming Council, we're trying to do as much study as we can with regard to Programming Council's past and work with the other GMs who have already put forth some changes to the PNB proclamation about Programming Councils. There are some things that I think are important that the Programming Council do, especially in moving forward. Programming Council, we need some form of regular program review, from everything from program quality to even FCC violations. We need people, informed people, trained people, listening to the programming to make suggestions about it. It's also a marvelous way for programmers, paid and unpaid, to learn, either learning by hearing what other people are doing that they shouldn't be doing, and learning by listening to people who are doing what they should be doing. So it has a lot of value, and I think we need to start focusing on the most important aspects, because I think we'll get some consensus there. In terms of jurisdiction, this is where I think it's going to slow things down a little bit, because it would seem that there are some who are promoting the councils as a way of simply overriding the program director. The idea would be that the program director would certainly be able to propose things, but the programming council would be in a position to oppose them. And instead of if they cannot come to some agreement, then it would be decided by the LSB. That really is a degree that gets a little bit scary, because one, as we talked about before, programming is in the purview of management. And in fact, one of the general managers has already suggested ways of making it more, even working with the program council, still a management responsibility. Also, there's accountability. If you're the program director and your decisions are overridden by either the LSB or the programming council, how does management hold you accountable? You're hired to improve things. You're hired to do a specific job. If the authority is taken away from you to fulfill those responsibilities, I don't know how you hold them accountable. So these are things we have to work out. But as I say, we are moving forward as quickly as we can, and we do meet on a fairly regular basis, and we hope to have some results fairly soon. Time versus money on volunteers. I think we're kind of conflating things that don't necessarily have to be so. In other words, in terms of being a member and being able to vote, that I can understand. But in terms of being a programmer and having a show on the air, I think for that specific level of volunteering commitment, I think a higher level of hours would be required for that than just simply being a member. And that's what we're talking about. So yeah, I can understand in terms of just voting, people who volunteer, yeah. That should be perhaps consistent with the very low money level that we expect from donations. But in terms of the privilege of having a program on the air, I think there should be a higher level of commitment in terms of the station's well-being from those people who have that privilege.
Andrea, you had indicated you had a concern. Has it been addressed? Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is the following, I'd like to welcome the interim executive director of Pacifica, Summer Reese. And I don't know if you've had a chance, anybody has briefed you, what we put aside on the agenda. Thank you for being here. we're suggesting a 30-minute open session, 10 minutes perhaps a presentation from you, and then a question period such as you've just been initiated through. And then it's my understanding that one of the things that we're interested in needs an executive session. So that would be the second half, and we've set aside another 30 minutes for that period, if necessary. And I'm announcing it for your advantage and also for the members of the public who are here, not members of the board, because we will have to excuse them when we go into executive session. So with that, I would like to invite you up here take over one of the mics, and thank you.
Hello, everyone. Thank you. It's nice to meet everyone that I have not met already, and thank you. Burton was the first person to, I think, invite me to come to the LSB in the year that I've been here. So thank you, Burton. And I wasn't able to avail myself of that last month, but I'm glad to be here now. I didn't prepare a long report for you. I don't know what everyone wants to know, so I guess I will briefly cover some of what's been done so far in the national office, some of the things that are going on at other signal areas that may be of concern. And then I'll take questions and I'll answer anything else that I didn't think to speak on already. So as I'm sure everyone knows, I became the IED August a year ago. And there's been a significant amount of cleanup work to do in the national office, from scrubbing the membership database that hadn't been cleaned in 8 years, to reconciling books that were $500,000 out of balance, I believe, and dealing with a very neglected administrative situation. And a lot of that has improved significantly. We've obviously gone through several issues in the last year because of those things, such as the suspension of our corporate status for failure to file the appropriate tax documents for a period of 7 years, and things of that nature. And those have been addressed, and we're in a better state of legal compliance. We've undergone a CPB audit in the last year, which audited fiscal years 2009 and 2010, and found issues with undervaluation of premiums, overstatement of listener support, various failures in compliance with the Communications Act. We have addressed those issues. I have appointed one of our already existing employees at the national level to be our CPB compliance officer, which has pleased CPB no end that I have put someone specifically in charge at the national level to corral all of the data at the local levels. These are essentially requirements that are the requirements of general managers to maintain at each station signal area, but have not necessarily been the case, so we are taking charge of it to make sure that quarterly everything is done that needs to be done and that we are able to show them that compliance, because they will be monitoring us quarterly for a period of time going forward. We are also undergoing an IRS audit for tax year 2011. Nothing of note there except that it's occurring. So we're addressing various issues to do with, you know, the functionality of the organization from a legal perspective, particularly, and financially. As we all know, the difficulties in the East Coast have been playing out dramatically in the press for most of this year. Every time I write a staff memo, it ends up in the paper the next day, and my cell phone usually ends up on the internet at least frequently. Washington, D.C. is in, I would say, moving in the right direction with changes in management there. We had a relatively successful fund drive in D.C., which is the first time that that has happened since I've been here, and in the period of time before I was here as well. So they are significantly on track towards not only being able to pay their own bills, but perhaps getting caught up on things that were behind, and maybe eventually being able to cover things like their health care benefits with the national office, which they were not doing this whole year, and who knows, eventually Central Services if things continue on track with the improvements that are occurring there. In New York, obviously our most, I want to say controversial, but certainly the thing which is playing out most publicly right now for the network, we've put out a request for proposal on considering LMAs or PSOAs, local management agreements, or public service operating agreements. Those are arrangements by which we would retain ownership of our license and some significant areas of legal control, because that's the goal of the regulatory framework that governs that, but where you would essentially be leasing the broadcast day to another entity most of the time, depending on what you negotiate for. A couple of things to say there. Offers have been coming to us all year every time something was in the press. At some point, and this is back to the fact that everything ends up on the internet the next day, and we have severe confidentiality problems within Pacifica. Essentially, there are any number of people at any time in any executive session who will breach confidentiality almost instantly. So we discussed in executive session on the PNB last month two offers that I was looking at, and the next day those people's names were all over the internet and I was getting inquiries as to whether or not they were making offers, which put significantly unpleasant pressure on them. And so we moved towards putting out a request for proposal, or I did, and the board supported me in that, in order to normalize the process so that it would be transparent and straightforward and not be directed at necessarily one or two entities, but allow anyone who is interested to tell us what they might have to offer. That being said, I would say this is something being considered because of the definite possibility of simply losing that signal if we don't take decisive action, and this is something short of selling or swapping New York. I think it's the preference, certainly, of myself, and I would say probably the majority of the national board, that we turn New York around if we were able to and continue it as a solely as a Pacifica station without any arrangements with third parties. During the course of this last year, between moving out of 120 Wall Street and obviously laying off two-thirds of staff, I've brought down the operating costs in New York by over $1 million a year in 1 year. We don't have any money, though, to do some of the things that are necessary to make the station truly functional, such as build out adequate studios at our much less expensive and very supportive Brooklyn building. But I feel it is necessary to make every effort to save the station, regardless of whatever we may be considering in the way of a business option. And my. We'll just wait a second there. In that vein, and I will try to be as... I did appoint an IPD out there, formerly your IGM, that has not had the salutary effect I was hoping for, and he has departed this week. On a purely financial vein, because I know, you know, I read all the everything that's going around, my interventions on day two of that fund drive are why they've been making $15,000 to $18,000 a day in fund drive. My interventions this past week is why they're now making $30,000 a day in fund drive. We did $28,000 already today, and it's a Saturday in New York. That's not what they do in New York normally. I'm making further interventions on Monday. I'm pushing them to make $40,000 a day. If they can make enough money, it means they don't have to necessarily, that we don't have to collectively make one of these arrangements with a third-party entity. Beyond that, we owe $250,000 in severance. We've almost lost the transmitter on multiple occasions this season. We are now caught up on transmitter rent. We're paying off the rest of the back rent to Roger Silverstein on Monday. We will no longer have any back rent owed there. So we're catching up on all the bills in New York. PFW managed to produce enough money to actually cover the East Coast health insurance. Again, unheard of in this last year. So I think sometimes people are critical of the fact that I focus on money, but we are a $10 to $14 million a year organization, depending on how much money we are or are not making, and we are in danger of going out of business because of what's going on at some of these stations. The East Coast has been pulling so hard on the entire network that it does without change jeopardize the survival of the entire network, including KPFA and KPFK. KPFT will probably get my attention next because it is also a catastrophically failing station with a fund drive that's completely in the tank right now. And I'm going to start messing with Texas next week. So it's because this is like fund drive is about making money to pay the bills so that you can continue to operate and do other programming. Obviously, we need to address the programming and what's in what hours and how well does it work. Is it in the right time slot? Is it well produced? Is it good? Blah, blah, blah. Is it good radio? We have real issues there as a network, but right now I'm addressing myself to the immediate present, which is making enough by the end of this month to keep from being swept under by a tsunami of process servers and people that want to collect debts. And that's really how it feels sometimes, is staying one step ahead of the next thing that is going to threaten our very survival. So a lot of my attention, that's why I left right there. That was a New York problem when I went out the door. New York is a constant. It's almost like running the entire rest of the network just dealing with New York. So I obviously hope that we will resolve some of those things in a positive manner that will retain WBAI as a signal within the Pacifica network and allow us to also improve some of the other things that are going on at the other radio stations. Obviously, in closed session, I will address the workplace investigation and anything that is of concern here that relates to those confidential matters. And look at that. I managed to use my 10 minutes. That was good. So I'll take questions, please.
The style that we use, and I would like it to be used here, is that the board members ask questions, take notes, and then you answer them all at once rather than one at a time. And we have 20 minutes for that. I see Janet's hand. I see Margie's hand. I see Andrea's hand. Oops. Give me a second. Donald. Am I missing? I've got Janet, Margie, Andrea, Donald. Have I missed anybody at this point? Okay. 3 minutes. Keep the questions as short as possible, please. Go ahead, Janet.
Yes. Thank you, Summer, for your report and for being here. I have two things that I wanted to ask you. One, about the status of the CPB grant. And the second has to do with the LSB elections, and I don't know whether this is you as IED or chair of PNB, but anyway, so it's my understanding that the election, the LSB election that was going to happen this year is postponed or moved to next year, and that those that are currently serving that would, that are on, their term would be over and they haven't termed out, would serve an additional year next year, and then the LSB elections next year would be for two-year terms for those people if they choose to run again. Anyway, it's somewhat complicated, but I'd like you to describe what's going to happen, but I'm also interested in, for those people who have termed out, it's my understanding that the runners-up will take those spots, but I'm not sure how long those terms would be. Would they be three-year terms, or would they also be one-year terms, and so forth? I'd also like you to talk a little bit about the situation at KPFK, where they didn't make quorum the last time, so how would that be affected?
Thank you. Margie, do you have a...
Well, after Janet, my question's really simple. I want Summer to tell us what's happened with the recall election that was initiated in 2011, and thank you.
Andrea, could somebody get the mic to Andrea? Thank you, Frank.
Summer, thanks so much for coming to the meeting today. That's really helpful. And I was hoping that you might talk to us a bit about development strategies that are being employed. I asked this question to Richard, but this notion of creating a different kind of membership structure within KPFA that was centered around web-based premiums, web-based offerings that are unique to people who become members. We've talked about it. I haven't heard I haven't been able to sit on the, I wasn't able to be on the development committee meeting most recently. I know that they're focusing on the 65th anniversary, but just kind of curious what strategies you've adopted and what are you trying to implement?
Thank you.
And also, where is underwriting in your on your agenda, in the agenda, in the mix? Thank you.
Donald.
Yes, it's my understanding that you serve, you have two hats on simultaneously, that you're chair of the PNB, and you're also the interim executive director. And my further understanding is that you were chair of the PNB when this administrative nightmare you just laid out of books not being correct, et cetera, were taking place. So I guess my personal concern is, how do I know that you're on top of this stuff now, number one? Second question is, I'd like to know how it is that you, as the IED and the chair of the PNB, can summarily state that we can violate the bylaws of Pacifica and not have elections this year.
Before I turn over the mic for responses, one last opportunity for board members, seeing none. I'm sorry. Brian, please.
The IRS audit, I'd just like to know what area they're looking at.
I'm sorry, what?
The IRS audit that you mentioned?
Oh, sure.
Anybody else? Seeing none, back to you, Summer, and... I lost track of where we are on time, so what's left in our... Pardon?
I'm trying to answer succinctly.
Oh.
I talk twice as fast as everyone else, so I can usually fit it in. Okay. All right, so Janet, status of CPB grants. So what has happened is I have had multiple meetings with CPB over the last several months. In fact, my chief contact person there, Timothy Appel, has moved on professionally, and to my understanding, they have not replaced his position. They've simply redistributed his workload. Last week, are we still in the same week? It could be the week before. I'd have to look at my calendar, but John Kriegler, our FCC attorney, and I met with CPB and their general counsel. Okay, so let me try to truncate this. When the CPB did their audit last year, my predecessor did not involve FCC counsel in the response, which was not the best course of action. And so our response was unduly broad and said that we would do many things that, in fact, we do not do in terms of notice at the local level. We have enough trouble with our multitudinous committees getting notices up on the air anyhow. And then there are certain antipathies between management and the board, which sometimes prevent useful communication. The Communications Act is significantly easier to comply with than are our bylaws. The bylaws require much more notice than the Communications Act. The CPB doesn't regulate our bylaws. They regulate the Communications Act compliance. Our response should have been narrowed last year to compliance with the Communications Act rather than not only our bylaws, but something even beyond what our bylaws call for, which is what happened. So I brought Kriegler into the mix to say, I need you to shorten this down to what we actually do, what we actually can do, and what they actually are in charge of. And so that's what we're doing. I appointed someone as a compliance officer because that made them happy. I mean, that made their lawyer really happy. He was like, great, you've put someone in charge of this. Now we know you'll be compliant. They're looking at our compliance through October 31st of this, you know, this month. Second and third quarter. Our second quarter was still a little choppy on compliance, but our third quarter is looking fantastic. So we're thinking that they will be pleased with us because their goal is not to punish us. Their goal is to see to it that we get our act together and that we become compliant and that we stop having these issues. That's why they're going to monitor us quarterly, to make sure we know what we're doing. So I believe we'll be able to show them that we do know what we're doing now, that we do have someone in charge of it, and that this has been streamlined and that we will be compliant here forward. I did inquire from Deborah Carr, she's our person at CPB now, how long it would be once they review. And they're also requiring that we submit all of our evidence in hard copy. So we can't provide them with links to our meeting announcements. we have to provide them with every screenshot and piece of paper for every announcement and everything we've done. So as Kriegler joked, we're gonna rent a truck and send that stuff over to them. I tried to get a beat on like how long would it be once they got this before our money actually gets loose. They wouldn't give me an exact time, but basically they said we are an extremely high priority for them, right up there with calculating 2014 disbursements. So I do feel that they're being as supportive as any type of quasi-governmental agency can be, and that they do desire to release our funds, and that once we've finished jumping through our hoops and they are satisfied, that they will do so. I have told managers not to think about getting those funds until mid-November, because I think that's realistic if they're looking at end of October to at least give them 2 weeks to do their part and get back to us. LSB elections. Okay, so this goes back into your question also, Donald. It isn't because I choose not to have elections. This isn't about me. I would choose to pay our attorneys. I would choose not to have people filing claims against us because we owe them money. I would choose probably not to lay off tons of staff at a unit because we can't pay them, and I would definitely choose to be paying the severance. We owe so many obligations. This station right here still hasn't paid off a legal settlement from last year. New York has legal bills they cannot pay. Maybe they'll be able to pay them if I keep doing things so they make money. The national office, we've chipped away at a lot of the pre-existing legal bills before I got here, and they're lower than they were, but we still owe things. And it's simply a matter of cash flow. It doesn't exist. It's not there. Every station is at the very, very edge of its budget. Nobody has any reserves. The only money that exists that isn't in your regular cash flow is what you've got in endowment funds, and you're the only station that has that going on besides a little tiny bit of moving money at WPFW. Nobody else has any savings. KPFK doesn't, KPFT doesn't, BAI doesn't. So you've got three stations that have no margin and two stations that only have restricted funds. It's purely a matter of money. It cost $250,000 to do the elections last year. I'm arguing for my budget, and I see people writing saying I'm arguing for discretionary positions of human resources and development and programming. Now, to say to anyone out in the real world, anyone outside of Pacifica, that you're running a $10 to $14 million a year corporation with hundreds of employees and you're having trouble getting approval for one position in human resources causes people to laugh at you. It is ludicrous. Nobody in the real world runs a business this way, to where you have to justify why you have to have one person in human resources so you stop getting sued for employment claims. This is a Pacifica problem. This is an overall philosophical problem. Do you actually address your funds to the things that you need to continue operating a radio network, or do you spend that money on other things which, quite frankly, don't necessarily contribute to operating a radio network? And these, to me, go back to the fact that we need to make fundamental bylaws changes. And I will say it, and I will say it every time anyone asks me about this. I don't think what we are doing is functional if you want to keep alternative media voices on the air. Because we fight with each other over fighting with each other. And we fight with each other over spending money so we can fight with each other, while we neglect basic burning building type issues like, can we stop getting sued because we put someone in human resources? Or, to go over to Andrea, see, it's hard for me to separate your questions because they are tied together. Development. So, development. The database in the national office hadn't been cleaned in 8 years. When I came in, there were boxes stacked 4 high and 12 deep on both sides of the hallway with the returned envelopes of bad addresses that no one had ever sat down to scrub out of the database. So every time a mailing was done, they sent out thousands of bad addresses. The archives hasn't done a mailing at all in 8 years. Bequests, legacies, having any of that happen? We have no policies, we have no investment policies, we have no literature, we don't have a planned giving department. All of these things I'm fighting for with my budget, little tiny pieces so that I can start creating the normal things that you would have in a nonprofit organization to sustain your future. Not just going on the air and asking for money, but actually having departments so that you can say, yes, of course we will send you our planned giving package. Yes, this is what we will do with your money. Would you like to give it for this fund or for this fund? These are normal things, and they're not even complicated, and they haven't been done here in years if they were ever done to begin with. So those are things I'm working on with development. So the elections tie in with all of that. There's no money. There's no basket of money. I could desire to do an election next week. We haven't finished paying off Election Services Corporation for last year. KPFK and the quorum. That goes back to Okay, so I probably have a much more hardcore attitude about management and running businesses than most of the people around me. I don't find it acceptable when managers tell me they can't get volunteers to give them their addresses and they just don't have any way to send them anything because they just can't get anybody to tell them their information. You're on our airwaves. You can cause us a $300,000 fine with the FCC. What do you mean you don't have this person's address? You know, why haven't they signed a packet that says, I understand the rules. I know what payola and plugola are. I know what I wrote an obscenity policy this year because how many times do I have to hear somebody made a mistake because they were just sloppy and didn't know that word couldn't go out on the air? Well, if it happens a bunch of times in 2 weeks at several stations, I know we need a policy. And everybody on the air should get that policy, just like they should know you can't promote your friend's concert and give the ticket prices. I mean, some of the stuff that happens on our airwaves are grossly unacceptable. And that goes back with your elections and quorum. Now, they failed to even send ballots to staff members at KPFK. That's a management issue as far as I'm concerned. You certainly have the addresses of the people that work for you. But for all the volunteers, every election, and I've gotten it on my management calls, we can't make them give us their information. What do you mean you can't make them give you your information? You set a deadline, and you say, you have 1 month to fill out your packet of paperwork, and then I'm taking your show off the air. Watch how fast everyone signs their paperwork, and you know how to reach them. It isn't complicated. It's a matter of will and setting objectives and goals and simply insisting on compliance. End of story, end of day. So the fact that they didn't make quorum, I didn't receive a ballot at KPFK either. Okay, I'll stop there. All right? That was appalling on every level. And it happens everywhere, and everyone throws up their hands and acts like they have no idea why it keeps happening every year. Recall results. So the judge ruled that we couldn't use the ballots, and they've been sitting, rotting away all year in safety deposit boxes. Yes. And it is now a moot point, since obviously terms will end in 2 months. And I have settled with Ms. Rosenberg and directed the ballots to be destroyed, which was filmed by our CFO when the election supervisor flew up here a couple of weeks ago. So we have shredded the ballots, settled the case, and we are done with that. So development strategies, I covered a little bit of that, but seriously, it is really about focusing on some really basic stuff, doing mailings, having clean database, working the database. I'll try to get through the rest of them if you give me a couple more minutes.
I see a motion for...
A motion to extend for 10 minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Please continue.
Thank you. I don't know his name.
Mal. Mal? Please get the mic to him.
Oh, here. You want me to ask a
question? Yeah. Oh, here it comes.
In your comments so far, you just mentioned that you settled the case with Ms. Rosenberg. Some of us who were involved in it would like to know what that settlement was, when it was reached, and why.
Probably as to specifics, I should address that in closed session when we go there, and I'll be happy to answer your questions when I get there. Okay? So development strategies. So some of these very basic things, I've been working with the archives because the Pacifica Radio Archives Unit, because of the failure or inability of WPFW and WBAI to pay central services for such a long period of time, that means that percentage of funding isn't there for the archives either. So I've been working, the archives received a $128,000 grant from the National Historic Records Preservation Commission, NHPRC, but it's a matching grant. So we have to make sure that we support our budget and our funding. So I've been working with Brian on specific, like this, it will be the first time that they have done a mailing specifically for the archives in the last 8 years. They have never done one during all this time. I'm souping up his website presence. I had him sign up for a car donation program. We're going to do that for national. A lot of these things, like I'm not anticipating fantastic bump the first year, but I expect to develop it so that by the second year, we see some real money coming out of these things. So for me, it's just basic nonprofit 101 strategies. There are basic things that you do that we don't do, and it's that simple. In terms of like special offerings of content on the web, yes, I know you and I talked about that last year. I've talked to Brian about it, you know. I asked him, what will it take to do 99-cent digital downloads? I mean, of one speech. He's like, I think we can do this for like like $1,000 worth of development. I'm like, let's get to it then. Do this, you know. So I think over the next several months, we're going to be working, all of us, my office, his office, you know, on increasing all of our development in all sectors so that we can start seeing some revenue coming in that isn't just dependent on air drives. Underwriting, I don't know. You know, I even mentioned that word in my house, and my mother is like, you can't do that. I'm like, okay. So everybody should be glad I have my mother. My mother keeps me straight on anything I might start to stray about around here. So I don't know. Managers, I'd say pretty universally, would like us to do something with underwriting, and I'd say the board pretty universally does not want us to do something about underwriting. It's not where I'm focusing my attention. There are all sorts of dogfights that, frankly, are not the first place to put your attention to, okay? Our problem isn't underwriting. Our problem is programming, promotions, and placement, okay? You know, put better stuff on at the right hours and tell somebody it's there. You'll have an audience. You'll make money. You know, underwriting would be nice, but it isn't the saving grace. I think there might be some collaborative things we could do with other organizations. I don't think everything is as odious as everything else. I mean, conceivably, we could develop rules that say, you know, nonprofit organizations, local small businesses, organic co-ops. I mean, we could put together rules that say we will take some stuff from people that fit within a very narrow confine of what we find acceptable. I haven't found any real juice for this conversation, quite frankly. So I'm not spending my time there. I'm spending at least half of every day on New York all the time. So, but, you know, if that matures into a different conversation, I'm happy to have it. So the two hats with the being the chair and being the IED, I don't know, this stuff has happened before around here. I chair the meetings a lot better than most other people. I've been doing that for 3 years. There's a reason we all meet on the same days for the last 3 years, because I like people to know what they're doing for the year and not wonder, oh, my God, do I have a meeting next week? I mean, a lot of it's just practical and functional in terms of running meetings and stuff. In terms of what does it really mean, hierarchy and structure, I think some of this stuff is kind of ephemeral, to be perfectly honest. It's about making real decisions and making real things happen, regardless of what your title is. Being in the ED position, I'm in a position where I can actually do things. Being in the chair, except for trying to keep people from, you know, being too uncivil to each other during a meeting, it isn't like you have any more real power there than anywhere else. It's really just refereeing the meeting. I mean, I don't know what to say. It's not like as chair I ever felt I was able to accomplish anything of significance in the 2 years that I was just chair. Being ED, I'm like, yes, you can actually fix problems because you actually have the authority to do so, which goes back to, I think you're the one who said that we don't, the boards don't exercise that much power. In terms of your thoughts of the previous administration, again, we're in an open session, so I really can't say the things that I said while I was chair. Starting from when both of those individuals were interim, not everybody equally supported everything all along the way. It doesn't mean that there was necessarily the political will to make anything change until it did, and then it did. And if everyone recalls, I was somewhat pivotal in that as well. So, you know, what can I say? It's a complicated organization, but even the attribution to sides and factions is insufficient to determine where people's thoughts are on various matters. So the bylaws, I already answered that about the elections. It's not about, well, I think the bylaws need to be rewritten straight up. I mean, no bones about it, but if we're violating them, it's because we don't have the money to do anything else. It's not there. And I think if we went to a court and showed them that we're being sued by various people because we can't pay them, we're laying people off because we can't pay them, we're completely without capital, I think a court might also see that we don't really have the money for $250,000 worth of elections. Perhaps something will come out of the board that makes this a less expensive process. Perhaps there will be consensus to do electronic voting despite many people's antipathy towards it, my own included, but it would be a lot less expensive. So that may be a way to achieve some compliance, is by simply changing what we decide to do, because it is printing and mailing that costs us so much money, and the very extenuated campaigning process with people being hired everywhere to do that. None of that is actually necessary to hold a nonprofit election. We could change how we do it, and we could probably do it in a much more cost-effective manner.
What would your mother say?
My mother agrees with me that the bylaws need to be rewritten because they're kind of ineffective right now. And it leads to, I hate to say it, I mean, just the sheer size of our boards leads to factionalism. People get along better in smaller groups. I mean, some of it's just group dynamics. It's not like I'm always telling people there are no good guys. There are no good sides and bad sides. Like, there's good and evil in everyone, and on all sides of these equations, it's not that simple. Some of it just comes down to people not getting along because the dynamics are set up to cause conflict. And I feel that's a lot of the way Pacific is the dynamics, the situational dynamics are set up to create conflict. Not because individual people are awful or wonderful, but because they get put into a situation that does not bring the best out of everyone on an interactive basis. For the IRS audit, Brian, to be perfectly honest, the CFO is engaged with that more than I am, but it's my understanding they're auditing the whole year of 2011. We haven't been given a reason, but like many things in Pacifica, you can follow a trajectory of events and say, I think that might be it. There's a certain gentleman in New York who has written us extensively telling us how he is going to turn us into every government agency under the sun. And he wrote to our auditors, and he's certainly written to me. And right after he said he was going to do that, lo and behold, we were being audited by the IRS. So I could be wrong, but I think there might be a connection. But they haven't given us any like specific thing that they're looking at, like we found this and we're concerned about it. They're just looking at that whole year. They've asked for various kinds of documentation. I can certainly get you more information on it. I mean, but I haven't gotten an inkling that it's something specific that they're looking for, but that they're looking at a wide range of things for that tax year. So, Brian, I don't have the answer for you. I mean, honestly, like, I mean, the CFO does handle some of these things, and he's the one dealing with that particular item.
And Janet has asked for an opportunity to fit in a question. Let me.
And I'm sorry, yeah. Mal asked a question, but I didn't write it down.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, following up on my election question, given that there is no election this year,
the other question. Yes,
who's going to be seated? What's the logistics?
Okay, so these are the things that could get litigated in the courts if people decide to drain our resources that way. I have some substantial legal experience, but I am not a lawyer. and Dan looks at me. I think, okay, so I believe that it would be more onerous to have people who are termed out continue to serve than it would be to have them replaced by alternates, because replacing people by alternates is a system that we have set up to replace people that have left for one reason or another. If your term is up, then you're supposed to be leaving. In Washington, D.C., they've had issues when they haven't made quorum, and they've had alternates or people continue, and they've simply continued until the next election. They didn't then get an entire term. So I would, and this again is my interpretation, it hasn't been vetted through tons of attorneys and it certainly hasn't been litigated, but I believe the most fair and transparent way of handling it is that people that have not been termed out would continue to serve until the election, and people that have been termed out would be replaced with alternates who would serve until the election, because that is, I believe, the least should have the least potential harm, whereas I think people who are termed out continuing to serve would certainly raise potential legal issues. So I think that's probably the safest route in an imperfect situation where we don't have, you know, a rule book to go by to say this is exactly how we should do it.
So. Thank you very much. We are about ready to segue into an executive session. I'd like to take advantage of the mic just to observe that the Pacifica bylaws are 4.6 times longer than the U.S. Constitution. For those people who are not members of the board, we are going to go into executive session. It's scheduled for a half hour. I would welcome you folks back, but I got to ask you to depart at this moment. And because of the way we're set up, I would like the cooperation of board members to help me close windows and close doors because we have a very loud sound system. I'd like to keep the executive session executive. Margie? I can't hear you. Hold it.
I'd like to suggest that we take our break now and start the executive session at 1:30.
As we get set up, that's a great idea. A 15-minute break as we do the setup, if that's agreeable.
That's fine. I said I want coffee. I'm good.
Let's come back at 9:30.
The next one is lump sum payments, meaning things that were paid by credit card immediately. That could also include some checks, I believe, but that were not spread out over months. Then the next item is those that would be made into installments. Somebody might want their payments to be 10 months or 12 months. And then there were $1,500 worth of people signing up for EFT, that's electronic funds transfer, which means something that's going to be taken out of their bank account automatically. The next figure is explanatory by itself. It's credit cards and then people that were going to be billed. The next one you'll see is the amount of money pledged with premiums requested, and then that amount of people paying without premiums. And the total number of pledges is at the bottom. Going back to the correction of the fundraising goal not being 734,000 but being 700,000, I just want to share with you that the email that Tracy distributed about how we would have to make up our difference then also has to be adjusted. The amount that she stated was 60,000 something, but in fact, the real difference between what we were expecting for ourselves and Fresno is 26,800. So it's entirely possible that that will be made up before we ever get to the December drive. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know that, but I know that people are still mentioning that listeners can go online and pledge. And that's about all I have to report here. Is any questions? Yes, Tracy.
What did you say was the combined chalkboard total of the fund drive achieved for KPFA plus Fresno? Did you say 615,000?
Actually, the phone room total was 673,153.
How much of that was Los Angeles?
That was the phone room total.
Right. How much of that after you take out? How much was left after you take out Los Angeles?
When the there is no tape run to verify that, but when you enter all of the cards that relate to Berkeley and Fresno, we come up with the 615,170, and the difference then would be close to 58,000.
That's correct. If you take a look at your assumption sheet disregarding Los Angeles, your chalkboard total for KPFA and Fresno pledges should have been 690,000. So if it came out to 615,000, then you're short, approximately $75,000. So the assumption sheet is
well,
helpful.
Well, I recognize that you're giving a lot of weight to the assumption sheet, but I'm telling you that the staff recalculated what was appropriate for this fund drive, because the assumption sheet was made up when we didn't know how many days we would be fundraising together with Los Angeles. And another thing that has happened, they had to calculate daily rates
Barbara?
With and without the two stations.
Can you?
And that's how they came up with actually a figure that was 694,000, and they rounded it up to 700,000.
Okay, can you let me continue? Okay, so the KPFA in Fresno pledge amount for the chalkboard should have been 690.
Tracy, the assumption sheet is not the Bible.
Barbara, I'm just telling you what's on the assumption sheet because that's how your listener support number is arrived at. And if we've pegged spending a certain amount of money because we're expecting a certain amount of money to come in, then we have to understand the differential between what we plan to have and spend and what we actually have to spend. So the KPFA in Fresno chalkboard should have been at 690 plus whatever amount we could expect from LA. Ideally about $30,000 a day. It looks like we did a bit less than that. And that should have left us, after we took out the Fresno portion, with $648,600 for KPFA at 91% fulfillment, which I think is about $580 net to KPFA. I just want to be clear what those figures are so we know where we are in relation to where we were hoping to be. Hopefully we can make up that gap in December. We may also want to look at the goal for the February drive, which in our assumption sheet is $758,000, which is a substantial increase over what we were able to achieve this time. So we may need to look at what a more appropriate goal for that fund drive would be. Thanks.
Well, I'm sticking to my guns here because the calculation that I've received from the business office who got figures from the data systems is that you stated in an email that we were had a $63,000 gap, and they calculate a $26,847 gap.
Are there any other questions to the treasurer? Brian.
Do you know when these figures were generated?
Do I know what?
When the figures were generated?
Friday. He's on this chart.
Friday. Any further questions to the treasurer?
I believe they had completed the data entry, but in fact, some of the credit cards had not been entered yet, and that there will be more money going into our bank account on Monday and Tuesday.
Any further questions?
Before
we go further, may I?
Here.
Oh, thank you. Before I go further, I would like to turn the mic back to Summer Reese. Do you have it? Good.
Thank you, I would like to acknowledge and welcome two of our colleagues from Washington, D.C. who are in the audience. Tony Norman, who is on the local station board in D.C. and is on the Pacifica National board with us. And Pete Tucker, his colleague, who's also on the local station board in Washington. I just wanted to welcome him. Vice Chair. Thank you, Pete. I was trying to remember which officer position you were holding this year. Thank you. So anyway, we'd just like to welcome him and thank him for being here today. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome to KPFA's local station board. Margie, did you have a hand up for an issue?
I sort of have the same question. I sort of have the same question Brian has had, which is, I don't see how we've never had figures this soon after the end of a fund drive, so I'm suspicious that there may be more money out there, and we know that money comes in online after the fund drives are over. So I would request that we get an updated report next month on the same matter. Thank you.
You will, and it'll be more extensive.
Thank you.
Dan, did I see your hand?
Yes. Are we
finished with this item? Yes. I move
to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Or is there a woo? Is there any objection to adjournment? Janet.
Thank you.
Is that true? Okay. Okay, it's not debatable. I get an education. By the time my turn runs out, I may know what the hell to do. All those in favor of adjourning, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The ayes have it. The meeting is adjourned. Pardon me?
To get our stuff off the table.
Oh.